Well, good morning, everyone. And, you know, I'm just so appreciative that we have decided to do this and we're all here together and settling in for the day. I'm so aware that upstairs and outside, spring is happening and leaves are unfurling and daffodils are shining, and it's just incredibly beautiful out there. And it's so interesting because I feel like I can experience this as this new thing that's just happening now, and yet it's filled with every other spring I've ever seen, you know? So it's like these memories of past springs are present in the present spring. And like, what would it be like to see this spring as the very first spring you've ever seen? I had a funny experience yesterday with Pino, my cat, who I may have mentioned. This is going to be tough. We'll see. I may have mentioned to you was kind of strictly trained by whomever it was that had him before. And one of the ways we notice this is that he does not go into the bathroom when you're in the bathroom. And every other cat I've ever had liked to follow me into the bathroom, maybe hang out there, you know, and it was like part of the process, and he wouldn't do it. So anyway, yesterday, for the first time, and not Patrick either, so it's not about me, you know, he just doesn't go in the bathroom. So anyway, yesterday, for the first time, sitting on the toilet, there's a countertop like right here, and he jumps up on the counter. And it's like, whoa, that's really different, right? So then I'm done, I get up, he's like, what's this? I flush, and his face was like, whoa, what's that? You know? And yet there it is, like a toilet. How amazing. So it's actually, I'm kind of joking, but this is kind of the topic of my talk, which is really about our mind and our memory. And the reason why this came up for me so much as I was writing this talk is it was right at the time when I was kind of honoring an anniversary of my mother's death. Okay, so light a candle and bring out all these photographs of her, and I am just flooded with feeling, with grief, and maybe even something else, you know, I don't know. And I was kind of, so for those of you that don't know or don't remember, you know, she had been ill for many, many years, very debilitating illness, included loss of memory over time, and I had been sort of the main caretaker for her. She was eventually in a facility because she was so unable to function, and it was a very sad and difficult situation, which meant that when she actually passed away, like, I just felt relief mostly, you know, which is, I don't know, I didn't expect that. Like, I thought, it was like, oh, I'll be sad, you know, but I was just like, oh, thank goodness, you know, yes, I'm sad, and this relief. And then, a year or a year and a half after that happened, we entered the pandemic. And there was story after story of people who were in nursing homes where their loved ones couldn't visit them. They were isolated. They were scared, of course. So trying to imagine what it would have been like with my mother, with her memory loss. And so during that time also, you know, it was like, thank goodness, right? Thank goodness she passed away before this whole situation hit. So it kind of felt like this was the first time that I just felt something much purer, you know, like, oh, I miss her. And there wasn't that, like, oh, what a relief, or thank goodness she's not here for that. Well, how would I be trying to explain this to her if she were still alive? But just like, oh, you know, Mom, you know, you're not here with me anymore. And at the same time that that happened, so the actual day that I was lighting the candles for her, I got word of another person who passed away, and this was a woman named Marty, who was the mother, almost exactly my age. We have birthdays in, within a couple of days of each other. Mother of my daughter's best friend since first grade. And these two girls went to school together all through high school, ended up in the same college, are now living, you know, within like an hour's drive of each other. They have the same birthday, okay? So this is somebody, Marty is somebody who also developed a kind of chronic debilitating illness with some memory and cognitive loss. And I was aware she had gone into hospice, and I got word that she passed away exactly on that day. And with her, I felt a very kind of different grief, you know? So we use the same word grief, right? The same way we use words like I'm angry, or I'm happy, or I'm sad. But here were two very different griefs that I don't even have the language to describe, like, what makes them different. But they were not the same feeling, and yet call them grief. So, you know, there's a part of our practice which is to sort of recognize when we're having these experiences, and then allow ourselves to really experience what that experience is. Because when we label something, that's helpful. Oh, I'm having this feeling. But if we stick to just that label and we don't actually allow ourselves to really experience what's going on, then we're not really we're not allowing that richness into our life. So, you know, something like grief, which is totally different in the moment it happens, in the first year, in the third year, with a good friend, with a parent, all of these different qualities. Now, grief comes for me, you know, in that this group series of grief with my mother really came out of memory, right? Because she had already passed away a while ago. Memories are thoughts, right? They're a type of thought. They're a thought that is apparently about something that we know happened, okay? So we have an experience, and then we have a memory of that experience. But we have to remind ourselves that the memories aren't actually true. And as any of you knows, if you've had gone over, you know, with a family member, some incident, you know, you might have very different memories of what actually happened. And then on top of that, when you're in the process of sort of revisiting that memory and you get the new information, your own memory changes. So memories are like all our other thoughts. They're impermanent, they're subject to change, they're created and destroyed within our own body, right? So, but the thing that's interesting about them is they give this illusion of this fixed past, and it's through memories that we begin to kind of evolve our sense of who we are in ourself, right? So because we've had these experiences, because I knew this person, because she was my mother, because you were my friend, I am me, right? And I have all these memories that go to bring that together. But all of those things, when we really look at them, aren't real, right? We think they're real, but they're not real. So the interesting thing about memories, right, like we can say, well, our memories aren't real and our thoughts are something we want to be kind of let go of, right, because they hold us back from really experiencing what's going on in the moment. And yet from our memories come what we are experiencing in the moment. And the reality is there's nobody in this room that wants to not have any memories, right? When I think about my mother, when she didn't have memories, that was not something that I aspire to, right? We want to actually remember things, and yet we want to let go of our thoughts. So that's a kind of parent contradiction, right? So Heart Sutra says, with no hindrance of the mind, no hindrance, therefore no fear, far beyond deluded thoughts, this is nirvana. Right? And I know that it can read like we're supposed to say, like, let go of the thoughts and so that we can have nirvana. Now, I do want to say one thing, though, thinking about my mother. So she was losing her thoughts. She was losing her memory. And on the one hand, this was a loss, right? Just like illness is a loss of health, and, you know, any number of things can be a loss. And she wasn't remembering her friends, and fortunately she still remembered me, but she was not remembering many, many things. And her vitality and intelligence were all sort of disappearing. Yet, from that emerged actually something new, a kind of childlike wonder, a real, like, innocence that hadn't been with her for probably since she was a child. And so, you know, I think in the end I would still say, well, I liked her better the old way, you know? But still, what emerged was also something wonderful. And so, you know, I think that the Heart Sutra is not talking about telling us to just lose our thoughts. It's telling us to lose our deluded thoughts. So what are our deluded thoughts? Well, from the Heart Sutra perspective, our deluded thoughts are that form is not emptiness and emptiness is not form. That's the main thing that's trying to tell us. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness is exactly form. That's not realizing that is our delusion. The hindrances are not the thoughts themselves. The hindrances are the layers that we add on top of the thought, which is that this is not a good thought, or let me indulge this thought and carry on with it on a long saga. It could be the woe is me of grief, right? We have grief, feel bad, and then it's like, I'm an orphan now. Isn't that bad, you know? Right, that's the layer on top of it. That's the hindrance. So now I want to sort of flesh this out a little bit with one of our Zen stories. It's not actually a koan in one of the collections, but it's related. And it's about Daishan Zwanzian, who's also known as Tokusan. He's a scholar of the Diamond Sutra. He's from the north, and he's been studying Buddhism forever. He's very brilliant, and he's studying the Diamond Sutra, and he believes that he really gets it, right? He knows how it is, writes all these commentaries on it, and is feeling, I think, very comfortable that he gets the whole point. Then he hears about this new form of Buddhism called Chan in the south. And these Chan people, which is Zen, right, these Chan people are saying, well, actually, you know, it's not about all these writings. It's about that you can directly experience this reality. You, your mind, exactly as it is a Buddha. Well, that's not his understanding. So he decides he's going to set them straight. Okay? So he packs up all his commentaries of the Diamond Sutta, puts it on his back, and heads off south. And he's going to find, like, the nearest monastery to go and explain how it really is. So as he's getting nearer, he comes across an old woman who's selling tea and rice cakes, one of many wonderful old women selling tea and rice cakes who have learned a thing or two over the years. And so he comes in and he's looking for refreshments, and she points at his bundle and says, what are those books? And Daishan says, these are commentaries on the Diamond Sutra. So the old woman says, I have a question for you. If you can answer it, you may buy a rice cake from me. If not, you'll have to go elsewhere for refreshments. I have heard that in the Diamond Sutra it says, past mind is ungraspable, present mind is ungraspable, and future mind is ungraspable. So, what mind do you wish to refresh with rice cakes, O monk? Deschamps was speechless. The old woman sent him on. He went to Long Tan, who is also known as Rio Tan, and with him he had actually the second stage of his awakening. The first stage, we could say, was that speechlessness when the old woman confounded him with her question. And then he had that bigger awakening, or the final touch with Long Tan. So, you know, I really think that Deschamps is a lot like us, or maybe at least a lot like me, okay? So, I'm sorry, would you mind moving, I can't see the clock.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you so much. Okay. So, Deschamps is like us. He lives in his world of thoughts, right? In this case, it's not as much memories that we're talking about his ideas. And we can see that when you live primarily in that, there's a kind of constriction of the personality, and that limits his ability to just respond spontaneously. And it creates the illusion of the self. I am Deschamps. I have these wonderful ideas. And maybe even on top of that, you know, and I think I'm really good. But you know, that's not that different than, and I'm really like not so good. Okay, so it's like that that sense of self and ego that he is reinforcing because of his focus on his ideas. And he believes these thoughts are real, okay? He believes, he knows his thought, and he thinks it's true and fixed, and it's what's being said here. And he also thinks these are his thoughts, right? Just like we think our memories our memories. So he takes ownership of this. I remember my mother. I am so sure. I have this great idea about what this book really is all about. I am so sure. And so there's this separation. And then one of the things that this wise old woman is pointing out to him is that that constellation of delusions associated with thoughts, memories, ideas confuses us about the nature of time. Okay. Past mind directly points to what is your relationship to the past, present, and future. And as I said, with memories, they confuse us. They're about the past. And we forget that the memories are actually happening in the present. So we don't see that relationship between the past and the present, or the future for that matter, and we start to see those as fixed points in time, and we don't see that flow that Dogen talks about in many of his talks. So the practice really is about allowing ourselves to have those thoughts, to let those thoughts arise, but without getting caught by them, okay? So we don't try and stop them, but we also don't believe them, right? We recognize that that thought is happening now, it's a memory that's happening now, but it's not separate from the past, and it's not separate from the future. So this allows us to actually experience the memory without creating ourselves. The thought arises, it flows through us, it's something that's part of time, it's part of our body, it's part of our being, it's connected to everybody else, right? Like, there's many other people that knew my mother. You don't know my mother, but now you know something about my mother. I've told you about Marty. Now Marty is part of you. Neither my mother nor Marty are gone because we've been talking about my mother and Marty. So they're not separate from my own existence. And in other words, that sort of frees up me, right? Whatever me is, which is all of that, it's not this fixed, rigid thing. So once we kind of understand that, we realize that when we allow that to happen, we can also allow the feelings to come up. And the feelings, I think, for me, are often the place where it gets confusing, because it can be, feelings can be overpowering, right? They can be very, very strong, and they can rise without even any thought seemingly to trigger them, right? They just are there. And I really think that that the teaching that's that we get from the precepts about how to deal with anger is actually the same thing with all of our feelings, right? So we don't try and suppress anger. We don't say anger's bad. And we don't say you shouldn't have anger. Anger is going to arise. What we want to do is make sure we don't indulge the anger. And that's true. We don't indulge our grief. We don't indulge our joy. We just allow these things to arise. We notice them, and we allow them to pass away. And we see that all of these feelings are what connect us to everything else, and they're actually a vehicle of our non-separation. I don't know if vehicle's the right word. They're evidence, or they're manifestation, that's it. Both a vehicle and a manifestation of our non-separation. And we can see that it's not permanent, like everything else, right? So we release from the grief, and we release from the anger, and release from all of it as we just don't cling, allow it to arise, and see how that connects us to everything else. We don't avoid and we don't indulge. We don't try and leave it too quickly, but we don't try and needle it to get more. We just say, this is our life. So I'm going to end with a poem. It's called Love After Love by Derek Walcott. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror. And each will smile at each other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes, peel your own image from the mirror, sit, feast on your life.
To say.